Every single day I feel the
Artlist IO.
Every single day I feel the pressure. Double up the work, let's make it extra. Working so my mother get a rest, yeah. Working like I never knew I'm best, yeah. Every single day I feel the pressure.
Welcome back to Voice of Rock. Now One Studio and the What He Made Of show. Back with another great guest to find out what he's made of, to inspire you to keep on to your journey. Persistence has been a repeating concept here. And, you know, I think it's very important for us all to understand that we must continue on the journey. Otherwise, we might as well not bother, you know. So that's why we have Terry Rice in the building today. Terry is a high-performance coach to entrepreneurs, a keynote speaker, and staff writer at Entrepreneur Magazine. He's also the host of the Elevate and Expand podcast that helps entrepreneurs scale their businesses by leaning on community. And prior to launching his own business, Terry's previous experience includes internal consulting roles at Adobe and Facebook. Based in Brooklyn, the BK, he is a husband and father of four children. Welcome to the show, Terry.
Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to this today.
Yeah, man. I reached out to you on Instagram, and like I do to a lot of people, to the Impact Makers. And then also, I believe my team might have even reached out to you via your podcast, because when we want to reach somebody, we don't like just rely on one source. I literally will go after someone that I want to connect with until they say, no, I'm not interested, or we get them. That's it. That's how we roll. So that's how I got Terry on the podcast, guys. And I just want everybody to know that, like, in a mission that you're on, you got to be committed and ethically do whatever it takes to get it done. So Terry, welcome to the show, bro. And I appreciate you being here, man. Like, the time it takes to come on and share and pour into people, I know for me, it's fulfilling for me, but it also takes time, and time is valuable. So I appreciate you.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate your setup. Like, you're just so prepared, like the music, the background, like everything's on it. So I'm already learning a lot just from observing you from here.
Thanks, man. Thank you. Well, look, I got to ask the question, the famous question. What are you made of?
Yeah, that's a hard question to answer, right? And I think on my end, what I've come up with is I'm the outcome of what happens when you actually apply a lot of very common best practices that are easy to understand, but rarely implemented. So things like meditation, having routine, having principles, so on and so forth. I don't think I've like invented anything new, but I've just applied these things to my life just due to some challenges that I've experienced and the need to get through them. So, you know, if you ask me what I'm made of, I mean, I'm a combination of that and just like the upbringing that was provided to me by my family. My father was an amazing guy, like, you know, fought in Vietnam, and he built his career out of nothing and ended up working at a tech company for 40 years. My mom worked at the FBI, and then after that, you know, raised a great family. So I'm the outcome of that and just applying, you know, what I can do to keep on ascending from there.
Yeah, man, I love it. So your dad worked in tech for 40 years?
Yeah. He worked at Xerox for 40 years. He started off as a forklift driver right after he got out of Vietnam. And I love this story because when he got his first paycheck, he bought a suit. And they're like, why is that guy, you know, in a suit driving a forklift? Like, what's the deal? Like, that's how he got recognized and promoted. But he didn't go to college. He didn't have any kind of education, but he would just figure stuff out on the fly. And this is back in the day, like, people would call to ask him a question. He would always let it go to voicemail, find out what the answer was, and then call back. And like, wow, Tom always has the answer. I'm like, no, Tom screens his calls. But he was just like really, really bright guy, and retired as like an executive vice president in their supply chains management part of their company. So I guess that's kind of aligned with driving a forklift. It's still supply chains management, but he got an office.
Yeah, you know what? And then those that do that appreciate the job much more because they know where they came from.
Yeah.
You know where they started. Yeah. and understanding everything. You know, one of the I said this on the show yesterday, but I'll say it again. This is so important. CEOs that I interview, a lot of CEOs, very successful ones. And one of the ones told me, he said, I go to the ground and talk to the people on the ground. I want to know what they're thinking, what they're seeing, and know everything, because I can't make decisions from my position if I don't know what they're seeing, you know, and perceiving. And, yeah. And so yeah, as a person going through that, that's powerful, man. Yeah. And then at the time,
go ahead.
No, yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I'll speak to that point because in the beginning, he had like a decent job, but we didn't have a lot of money still when I was very young. So he was also a janitor at the same company. So he had to talk to the people that were on the lower levels because those were his coworkers too, right? So yep. He had a lot of empathy for everybody there.
Yeah. And then how about your mom in the FBI? What did she do for the FBI?
She was not like jumping over cars or chasing spies, anything like that. She worked in the office. So yeah. I do want to bring that point up. But she was exposed to some amazing people there just being in the building. But I do want to get the details that she was not necessarily chasing down the bad guys.
Well, I mean, based on your age, I'm guessing you're probably, well, I don't even want to guess, but based on your age, your mom might have been there during the mafia stuff that was going on probably, right? During that time?
Well, how about you guess my age? I want to see what that you come up with.
All right. So, all right. I'm not going to try to be like nice or anything. I'm just going to be honest. So I'm going to guess, you know, you got to do that kind of stuff, but yeah. I'm going to guess 38.
Close. 45.
Okay.
But Shaquille O'Neal, I interviewed him. He thought I was 27. And I was like,
did he really? I was just trying to be nice. Is that how he talks with you, bro? I was trying to be nice. Yeah, Shaq's a good dude, man. Did you have a good time with him?
I did. Yeah, I did. And he made fun of my name, Terry Rice, thinking like, oh, are you Jerry Rice's cousin? I'm like, well, no, that wouldn't make sense. But but yeah, anyways, back to your question, because I don't want to get too derailed here.
No, that's fine. But like, yeah, so you're in mid-40s. I'm 47, I think. I forgot my age, by the way. I feel like I'm in my 20s. But your mom, was she at the FBI when the mafia stuff was going on and when they were working on Gotti and all that?
This was the early 70s. So I think Gotti was still kind of ramping up to where he would eventually become this crime boss at that time.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I like studying all that kind of stuff. All right. So Terry, performance, man, I want to talk about performance today. And what do you think it was about your life growing up that really tied you to performance?
Yeah, well, like I said, my dad was in the military and I didn't realize that he was passing along that resilience and that discipline by design. But just things were, I don't say they were strict, but they were very structured. And what he said is, hey, look, you know, the benefit of structure is you can do whatever you want as long as you stay within these lines. So I had freedom, but I knew where the guardrails were. And it's funny. I mean, I grew up in a nice area. I grew up in like Rochester, New York, or outside of Rochester. So suburban area. But a lot of my friends who looked like me, because like there was only like a few black kids in school, they started doing things to act out to try to like act blacker in a way. And like, I'm like, why are you taking all the negative part about being black? Like, why are you like committing crimes and stuff? And things didn't work out too well for them, right? And unfortunately, some of them went to jail. And on my end, I'm like, I'm going to be a good example of, you know, how African-American could behave in, you know, in general, and went the right way. But it's because my parents were so strict or so disciplined in the way that I acted. So I did all the things. I went to the parties, you know, I played football. I was popular. But when it came to certain things, I'm like, dude, I'm not going to drink before school. I'll drink after, but I'm not going to drink before, because I didn't want to like personify all those negative connotations that people had in regards to like, you know, black people back then.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it, man. I love that. And the other thing about this discipline word, right? When I was a kid, we used to like categorize our parents like, oh yeah, his parents are strict. They're disciplinarians. Yeah. And discipline was a bad thing when we were younger. But like when it comes to performance, discipline is actually a really, really, really good word.
Yeah.
So like, you know, and then the other thing about the guardrails you mentioned too, I want to point this out. Guardrails. Guardrails are a good thing. and you're actually more free when you have boundaries. It's counterintuitive, I know. But coming from when you're in your performance expertise and what you work with entrepreneurs, can you talk about that a little bit? Like with boundaries, how boundaries make you more free and actually discipline makes you a better entrepreneur, more successful, more capable?
Yeah, what I like to do with people is I first of all have them develop a vision for their life. So how do you want to be thought of? What do you want to be doing? Like what's the legacy you'll leave behind? And then also associate a personal philosophy with that. And we can get into that later if you want. Then we say, okay, cool. Well, for you to be that person, what do you have to do right now, right? To become the future version of yourself. And that goes down to the routine. So you want to be in shape? Great. We have to block off X hours a week for you to go to the gym. You want to write more content? You want to be a thought leader? Great. Let's block that off too. So you are going to have to make some sacrifices, but there's a freedom in doing so because that's how you get to ascend to who you want to become. And you don't feel guilty. You don't have this nagging thought like, oh, I should be doing something else, because at any given moment, you know exactly what you should be doing, including relaxing. I'm not saying like hustle, 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 but chill when you plan on chilling, like right now in the middle. So that's all you have to do. I mean, Ryan Holiday has a book called Discipline is Destiny. And I truly do believe that. I mean, on my end, just to give you a personal experience, I wanted to get in better shape. I looked like I was like good enough shape, like, you know, last year, but I didn't want to be that guy taking my shirt off at the beach either, because I knew there was some stuff going on underneath. So my goal was to get my body fat from 24% down to 12%. And I did that within a period of 6 months, just by being more disciplined, just by adding one more day to the gym and by doing things like intermittent fasting. So I like being an example of the transformation that I want to guide my audience through, because otherwise I'm just a hypocrite. And I gave myself this challenge. And on LinkedIn, if you look at my post, you'll see me with shirt off day one, shirt off day whatever it was, and things worked out. So that's all it is. It's being disciplined, but you're not going to be disciplined if it's not tied to a clear vision. So that part's really important too.
Yeah. So let's talk about that, because I was laying in bed the other day meditating, and I was thinking about, this thought came to me, is like, so many people think that they don't have enough skill, knowledge, people around them, money, all this stuff. It's really not that. Majority of people don't have the vision. They don't know what they want. And then it's like, It's so obvious. Like, if you don't know what you want, you can't go anywhere, and you're going to be, of course you're going to be unhappy, because you're like kind of lost when you don't know where you want, right? Do you find that with the people you work with, most of them don't have a clue really what they want?
I'll say this, if you don't have a vision, someone will dictate it for you. And that someone might be your boss or something you see on social media. And that's dangerous, right? Because you can easily end up somewhere that you don't want to be. And to answer your question, yes, most people don't have a defined vision. They might have a goal. Their goal is they want to have $1 million in the bank. Well, how do you get it? Like, you know, what does that look like? What does it feel like? How are you known? Because there's two parts of your brain, right? There's a doing brain and the thinking brain, right? But the doing brain only does what the thinking brain thinks. So if you don't have a very clear path to that, it's called pathways thinking. The doing part's like, I don't even know what we're doing. Like, how do we get this $1 million and why don't I even want it? So when you have that vision, one exercise that I do is called future casting, where when I journal, I write down something I want to happen in the future as if it has already happened. So I'll say, oh, today me and C-Rock are going to Germany. We're going to do this great talk on mindset and how you can apply it to your life. Really excited. I'm bringing all the kids, you know, hope they don't act up on the plane. I'll write that down as if it has already happened. So I'm connecting with my vision every single day down to the detail. Like, you and I are going to Germany. I hope my kids don't cut up on the plane. Like, I'm that clear on it. So that way I can align myself with activities that guide me there, and also avoid opportunities that are actually distractions and advice in disguise too, because that happens quite often.
Yeah. You know, I talk a lot about binary decisions and eliminating chaos and confusion, right? And when you have this vision that you're talking about and you're very clearly defined on it, you can decide thoughts, words, actions, and the people around you, okay, whether they go towards that vision or not. And that's, it makes it an easy decision, right? Instead of being stuck in a maybe, right? And that's what I found with what you're saying. I mean, it's simplicity is so crucial. And then once you start aligning these things, you start chipping away or actually gaining a little bit by little bit by little bit. But then the overall thing, it's like an exponential effect. 3, 6 months, year from now, you don't even recognize yourself, but you got to get started on it. Right.
Yeah. Even when I was having my first child, I asked a friend of mine, I'm like, hey, how do you be a good dad? Like, you know, what should I do? Like, how should I prepare? And he's like, man, it's easy. You just decide, do you want to be a good dad or a crappy dad? And then move forward from there. And it sounds simple, but it's true. Like, what does a good dad do? Go figure it out. You know what I mean? Like, once you make that decision, you just move forward and you're in a good spot. And that decision fatigue or uncertainty, I think that's what holds people back. And if you just take some time to work on yourself instead of like trying to hustle, you will be very clear on what you want to do and how to move forward effectively as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Hey, do you find this, when I'm shooting content or pushing stuff out there, a lot of times I find that it's me talking to myself. Something that maybe like I'm going through right now that I am working through. And then when I figure out the solution or what have you, I'll shoot some content from it. And so then I start to watch other people's content and I'm like, man, I feel bad for that person right now because they're going through that. I know what they're going through because I feel like everybody does that. Do you do that yourself? And then is that where a lot of your content comes from?
It does, because like I used to be a digital marketing expert. I used to work at Facebook and I worked at Adobe. So like when I went independent, that's what I was talking about. And even after that, I became more of like an entrepreneur, like expert in residence at Entrepreneur Magazine, actually. And that was my content. But it felt kind of empty after a while. Like, I'm like, this is not my highest contribution to the world. So instead of sharing like how-to content and frameworks, most of my content now is either observational or things I've experienced. So I'll say, hey, yesterday I couldn't go to the gym because I was busy. You know, I'm a you know, creature of routine, a creature of habit, but sometimes you do have to break them and not feel guilty about it. And that was my post today on LinkedIn, just talking about it. But today I'm going to go to the gym and crush it, right? So when you do that, you actually never run out of content because you're just talking about things you're experiencing and observing. And I think you connect better with people too. So on my end, that's what I enjoy doing. It's like, it's something that I needed to hear maybe recently or years ago, but either way, I can speak from my own experience, not just sharing frameworks. Cause like, you got to live it, learn it, then teach it. Don't just like, you know, learn it and teach it. Like, that's not how it works.
Yeah. And you know, I always like look back at my content. I'll see some memories come up or I'll look back on it and I'm like, wow, man, that seems like such an easy problem. I can't even believe I was telling people that this is how it should be done. Everybody knows this, and you take it for granted what you become at that point, you know? So, and then the other thing I was going to tell you about this or ask you about had to do with, it was right on the tip of my tongue. Content, watching it back. When you're writing an entrepreneur magazine, right? Like, how do you come up with your concepts for that? Do you do it the same way with like living and experiential, or how does that go? Or do they dictate what they want from you, or?
Some of my articles, they are assigned by an editor, but often it's a combination of one or two things. It can be something I'm experiencing, right? So it could be like, oh, here's this new way I found to get work done, even though I have four kids at home. Like, here's what we did to keep them occupied, so on and so forth. Or it's just like, I feel like the world needs some help. So I'll say, look, here's like this quick guide on how to be more optimistic. Just look for three good things that happened today and then write them down. That way you're looking for good things to happen and expecting them to happen as opposed to focusing on the negative. So if I feel like, not in a preachy way, that there's a healing that needs to take place in the world, or I know someone who needs this content, I might share it with them in a private message. Then I'll think, you know what? That's a bar. Let me go ahead and make that an actual article and share that with a larger audience. So it's not as like strategic as some journalists might be, because for me, I'm like, I'm just trying to leave a legacy, not have like, you know, something that's going to like, you know, get a lot of clicks and likes and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. I like that. And then as far as your, I want to dive into a little bit of the Facebook, season of your life in a second, but before I do that, I want to dive deeper into you and challenging things that you've been through. Okay. And I don't know what they are. So let's go into it. When I say this, the most challenging time of your life, what comes to mind?
Yeah, this is going to get deep. The most challenging time of my life is when my son died. And that was, as you can imagine, very difficult. And I'm going to lead into that, actually. I'm going to start with the Facebook days, because that's actually part of it. Because on my end, I used to drink heavily. I would drink every night for about 10 years, sometimes in the morning, to be honest, which I know isn't a healthy decision to make. But that was my life when I first moved to New York City. And I had great jobs, right? I'm working at Facebook, I'm working at Adobe, like so on and so forth. But I was always hiding a secret. I was underperforming as well. And it just impacted so many activities during the day. Like, I would not want to be in an elevator with you because I would fear that you would smell the alcohol on me from the day before. Like, that's how I'm navigating life. Like, hopefully nobody gets in the elevator, right? Take the stairs, so on and so forth. So that finally came to a head. In 2015, one of those dates, and ended up getting laid off from Facebook. So it's like, great, you know, like I had this amazing job, I had this ego about it as well, and now I'm just like an unemployed alcoholic. Great, right? And then I find out that I have a kid on the way too. I'm like, awesome, this is gonna be great, right? So it took me a while to just get things straight after that. I mean, I quit drinking right when I heard I had a kid on the way. But it was months before I felt functional again in the business world, and still had some guilt and embarrassment over getting fired. And I'm fortunate that I met the right people who were able to put me in the right positions to get my career started as an entrepreneur. And that took off relatively quickly. I had some luck there combined with some really hard work. And by year two, I was already making $200,000 a year. So I was like, okay, cool. Things are going well. Like, I can't believe I rebounded like this. This is amazing. Humming along, like, you know, doing great. And then my son TJ died at birth, unfortunately. So when that happened, I was just grateful, first of all, that I was not drinking, because that way I was more functional, you know, to my family, my wife, who needed a lot of support, as you can imagine. But I didn't really want to be around people. I just didn't. I couldn't show up because it was painful. And at that time, I was leading a lot of workshops, and I had to be, you know, customer facing, and that was challenging. So I retreated for a while. I didn't hang out with anybody for a year. None of my friends at all. And these are guys I've known 20 years. And I would only work online. I was like, I'm not doing anything in person, because it would drain me too much to be around your energy, just because people didn't know what I was going through. So that was tough. And I didn't say that publicly, actually, until last year. So he died in 2017. I didn't mention it publicly until 2022, during a keynote, actually, on stage in front of 1,000 people.
Wow.
Because I just got sick of hiding that stuff. So you're saying, what are you made of? That's part of it. And I was hiding what I was made of. And I think it was harder for people to connect with me, or at least understand me, because of that. Because I think you can probably tell, like, even like little micro expressions, like, oh, that guy's got something going on. But I didn't mention it because of that. So that was definitely the most challenging part of my life. And I've used that now to help other people get through their challenges based on what I've done. And that's the new podcast I was talking about. It's called Reclaim in Advance, where I bring on high performers like you to talk about the lowest point they might have had in their life and how they navigated through it. So when I said at the top of the show, I'm a combination of someone applying best practices to their life and getting those outcomes, that's what it is. Because that's when I got into stoicism and the meditation. My fitness just exploded in a positive way after that too. And I learned the value of that resilience my dad was trying to instill in me my whole life. He unfortunately passed away before, you know, my son did too. But gosh, it was a very painful time, but also a very beautiful experience, because on the other side, I'm able to help people more effectively now, because I have that empathy and the experience needed to help them get through their tough times as well.
Yeah, man. Well, I'm sorry you went through that. But again, I always say this, and I wrote a book about this, Rocket Fuel Convert Setbacks Become Unstoppable. No matter what the setback is, it could be loss, it could be whatever the case is, there's always opportunity to turn it into something beautiful. And it gives your son purpose. If you were to just go into mourning and then never come out again, and then just not live your life anymore, it gives your son less purpose than you to turn it around and now be impacting the way you're impacting, you know? And that's the powerful thing.
Yeah. And that's the realization that came to me, and I'll tell you the story. So walking to my gym, there was always this Maserati parked out front with the license plate, Dr. TJ. And my son's name is TJ. And it would sting, because like every day I got to see this. I'm trying to work out. I'm trying to do something better for myself. And I see this license plate, says Dr. TJ. And in my head, I was thinking, you know, he could have been a doctor. He could have been an entrepreneur. He could have been a teacher, an engineer, all these things. And I was upset because, you know, he would have had a lot to contribute to the world. And eventually I was like, you know what? He can't, but you can. So get going. And that realization alone is really what put me into overdrive. So I would look forward to seeing the license plate now. I'm like, okay, cool, let's get it. You know, it was almost like my trigger, my signal, like, hey, keep going. And you know, he won't be a legend, you know, in regards to sports or what he does in business or anything, but he will have a legacy. And I'm living that for him right now. And for me, that really lights me up.
That's a great performance hack, is that trigger. Finding something that you can trigger off of 100%. Man, and then how does it change, do you think, the way you would have been a father for your other children? What do you think the difference is?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because, I mean, my oldest daughter was around when he passed away. So she was about 2 years old. And for months, I would sleep in her room because she would always like need me to hold her hand when she was going to sleep. But after that happened, like, she was holding my hand too. I would sleep on the floor just for months, just holding her hand and just having that connection. And it was a special opportunity for me to have her there. But with my other kids, you know, I'm more appreciative of them, as you can imagine, because it's like, hey, you know, I know what it's like to lose a kid. But they still get on my nerves sometimes. They just do.
Of course.
And I don't feel guilty about them getting my nerves either. I'm like, I'm not going to like act like a saint the rest of my life. I'm like, you are annoying right now. So I had to get used to forgiving myself for getting upset with them at times, because it's like, no, you have to move on your with your life in a way that is, you know, realistic. Not like I will never get angry at my kid again. I'm like, no, you spilled milk for the third time, dude. Like, knock it off. So
that's
why. But we do take the time to honor him. They do realize that they have a, you know, another brother who's not around right now.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that, man. And I appreciate it. And I know the listener appreciates it. You know, because there's always something that can happen. I've had so many, like, all these different stories on the show. And every time I've seen the, you know, I invite successful people on the show and impact makers, and they always have converted. That conversion that happens from something that we seem so bad at the moment, is just such, I think it's more powerful energy than motivation or good things that happen. I really do. I think there's an exponential, higher power there.
Yeah. And it's funny, I was thinking about my time at Facebook the other day. I'm like, I'm so glad I got fired. I know that sounds weird to say, but I'm so glad I got fired. Like, it scares me to think how my career would have progressed if I never, like, got forced out of corporate, because I wasn't a good fit. I mean, I was getting jobs and everything, but I was never really happy. Like, I would look around, I'm like, I don't want anyone's job here, including mine. But it was hard to, like, you know, admit that. So it just set me on this beautiful path where now I'm a keynote speaker. I'm a consultant, podcast host, writer. Like, none of that stuff ever would have happened if I had just stayed in that they call them the golden handcuffs, and hadn't been forced out. So that's not something I say to people when they're going through something, like, oh, don't worry, it's gonna be the best thing that ever happened to you. Like, you know, give it some time. But gosh, you know, I'm so fortunate. I'm even fortunate that I struggle with alcohol, because now I know what it's like for other people who are going through those challenges. And it also proved to me, like, no, you are resilient, dude. Like, you quit this habit, and, you know, there's always the fear of relapse. I'm like, bro, I would have relapsed when, you know, like, my dad died, my son died, my brother died recently as well. Like, there are plenty of opportunities for me to relapse. Like, nah, dude, I'm good. Like, so when you say, what are you made of? Like, that's it. You know, you can see it. I'm an example.
I think it's becoming hip not to drink. I've really seen a movement, a trend with this, and I don't know, you know, it could be numerous things involved with it, but there's marketing of new products out there, like mocktails and this and that, and restaurants and bars are starting to carry these things, and I like this, man. I like the idea of this being hip. Yeah. All right.
One thing I'll say is, like, my wife works for a spirits company still. So it's like, it's funny. Like, we have, like, cases and cases of alcohol here. And I'm like, I don't want it, but if you got to sell it to pay these bills, go for it. But what I never want to do is make it seem like I'm anti-alcohol. I'm like, I'm anti-overconsumption of it. But hey, have a beer, have a drink. I don't care. Like, I don't want one. But when I order a mocktail, everyone's like, oh, I want one too. I'm like, you do what you want. Like, don't follow my lead. But it is pretty good.
I went 30 days right before our Jamaica trip from last week, and when I got to Jamaica, it's an all-inclusive, and I had a couple tequila here, tequila there, one or two a day. But I noticed, like, the difference. Like, I had, like, this anxious feeling the next day from like the alcohol, and I was like, you know what, man, maybe I just don't need this stuff at all. But when you're in an all-inclusive and you didn't quit drinking, you're just like, I just have one, you know, here, there. So but anyway, it's been a part of my life too, man. So anyway, as we wind down here, I want to know your vision, man. I want to know what you're going after right now. Like, what is the thing that, if I could snap my fingers and make it happen, like, what's that picture look like?
Yeah, I'll tell you my long-term vision. It's very clear. So I live in upstate New York, so, like, the Westchester County area. That's where I want to live. Right now I'm in Brooklyn, and my backyard is huge. I have a CrossFit rig set up back there, and I train my kids on functional fitness. Any kids in the neighborhood, they can come to, the parents, so on and so forth. Like, that's the house. We're a beacon for people who want to have mental and physical resilience. And in my home, I also have a studio in the basement. It's always set up with my microphone, my camera. I'm down there creating content. I'm loving it. There's always some random kids running around upstairs. I know some of them. I don't know some of them, but they're my kids' friends. And we're just helping people, you know, like, not just me, but my family. We're volunteering every weekend and just trying to do good in the community and just really leaving a legacy that we want to help other people and share all that we have. So that's the experience I want to have. That's the vision I have. And then what I do is I'll look for opportunities today to experience some of those emotions and feelings too. So I don't say, like, I'll be happy when. It's like, okay, well, what can you do now to have that feeling? And really just with my content, just helping people not just overcome setbacks, but also just build the resilience to not be afraid to take on challenges, because you know that even if you do fail, like, hey, man, failure's not fatal. I'll be okay. And that's what the new podcast, again, it's called Reclaim and Advance, is about, just helping people discover that resilience that's already within them and helping them pull it out.
Yeah, I love it, man. I love it. You know, I when I was 14, I went up to my uncle and aunt's house in Chappaqua and had a big house and they had this big backyard just like that. And they had a trampoline out there. We were hitting golf balls out there and everything. So when you were talking about that, I just imagined that location up there. So, yeah, that's awesome, man. Well, Terry, listen, how can people go deeper with you? Where do you want to send them?
Yeah, two things. One is if you want to learn more about the podcast, you can go to terryrice.co/reclaim. So it's terryrice.co/reclaim. And then on Instagram, it's Terry Rice.
All right, guys, go check It's Terry Rice out on Instagram. Let him know you heard him here on the What Are You Made Up show with your boy C-Rock. And I want to thank you, the listener, for keeping coming back, the consistency you've showed me, the support. I really appreciate it. It means the world to me to be able to have this platform to speak to you and help you. And remind you that you're unstoppable to live in the life of your dreams. So until next time, C-Rock here signing off from That One Studio on the What Are You Made Of show. Be That One.
Music licensing reimagined.